genius.
The fully realized vision of an authentic American genius.
We need your brain.
Don't you have a brain in your head?
Oh, then I will have to adjust your brain a bit.
Every day, Billy the Brain talks with the best guests in America.
Cool.
About business.
The boss that works for you.
Entertainment. Sports.
Turning now to sports.
And the local community.
Radio keeps its eye on local events.
It's time for brainstorming.
My brain is like mush.
With Billy the Brain.
Sounds like fun. Let's go.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Hi, this is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We're live every day, Monday through Friday at 10 o'clock here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura and Santa Barbara counties. You can also hear us streaming on the internet at brainstormingonline.com. My goal is to bring you interviews with thought leaders in business, entertainment, sports, and the local community. Together, we'll listen to what these people say and relate it to how we live and work right here in Ventura County. Brainstorming with Billy the Brain is smart radio with sharp questions aimed at intelligent guests. It's talk radio done right for the 21st century. If you want to join in the conversation, you can always call us at 639-0008, or if you're outside of the area code, it's area code 805-639-0008. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is, before we get to today's theme, I want to remind you to take the poll that is up on my website. You go to brainstormingonline.com, and I ask a very simple multiple-choice question. Which would you rather have? Would you rather have a daughter with easy virtue or a daughter with no friends at all? Surprising, looking at the results so far, it's mixed, and I thought that that would be a slam dunk question, but they're showing to be surprising results. So go to my website, brainstormingonline.com. That's brainstorming, S-T-O-R-M-I-N, online.com, and take the poll there. I'll announce the results of the poll in a future show. As I said, every show has a theme, and today's theme is challenging what you thought you knew. Each of my guests will present new facts about something you thought you knew. My first guest is on a crusade to save the U.S. Post Office. He contends the post office we thought we knew is vitally important to the fabric of American life. We'll discuss his compelling reasons why we need to save the post office. My second guest is one of the world's foremost ufologists, and he's also a trained journalist. We'll discuss the proof of existence of UFOs. My third guest is the founder of Quantum Coaching Success Academy. We'll discuss how women should be fierce and feminine and get everything that they want from her latest book, Taming Your Alpha Witch. And as always, if you want to join in the conversation, you can call us at 639-0008. Steve Hutkins is Associate Professor of English at New York University. He received his PhD in English Renaissance Literature from NYU, his Master's in English from NYU, and his BA in English from the University of Wisconsin. He's currently teaching and research interests focus on place studies and travel literature. Interestingly, in 1998, he received NYU's Distinguished Teaching Award. His current crusade is to save the U.S. Post Office. Steve was featured in Time Magazine articles in late 2011. Joining us from the East Coast. Hi, Steve. How are you doing today?
All right, I'm doing fine. Thanks for having me on the show, Bill.
Well, pleasure to have you on. And this is such an interesting topic, so I wanted to get this out with my audience so that we can have some discussion. And if people have a feeling about this, they want to call in, they can call us at 639-0008. You were recently written up in Time Magazine for your efforts to save the post offices around the country. And you were quoted as saying, and now I'm quoting from Time, it wouldn't be far-fetched to argue that the Postal Service has been the most important local institution in our country's history. The Founding Fathers considered it so important that it was put into the Constitution, mandating that Congress have the power to establish post offices. So tell us, why do you feel so strongly about this?
Well, my interest in the post office just started with my own post office, which I learned might close back in March. We thought how horrible it would be for our little community to lose our post office. It's kind of a, you know, a nerve center, a social hub. People run into their neighbors there and say hi and things like that. But when I started looking into it more, I realized that the post office in history is much more important than just the services it provides to a small town like that. It, as they say, it binds the nation together. It was important in colonial days, distributing news, helping in the Revolutionary War, and it's played an important role ever since.
Well, a little bit closer to home, just so that you know, Steve, we have a processing center that is down in Oxnard, California, and it is projected to close. Mail that was processed in Oxnard is now going to go 50 miles away to a processing center in Goleta. The proposed savings are about $2.2 million, which is a, you know, a fairly big chunk of money. Jobs lost will be 79, but that's the challenge that everybody is facing around the country. So why is the demise of the post office a problem that's really worthy of our national attention?
You actually have 10 processing plants in California and over 100 post offices that may close. 20 of them have closed recently, several of them important historic buildings in Venice, Modesto, Ukiah, Palo Alto. Got some beautiful post offices there. The Postal Service is closing and selling to pick up a few dollars. It's really dismantling a huge infrastructure that employs 600,000 people and is a center in so many communities across the country. They want to close 250 plants like the one that you're talking about, and each one of those is an important part of its community, providing a lot of jobs and stimulus to the economy.
All right, my guest is Steve Hutchins. Steve, I'm going to take the other side of the argument, though, for just a moment here, because what is the United States Postal Service to do? Last year, they lost $8.3 billion. This year, they lost $5.1 billion, meaning 2011 now, because we're not through 2012. In 2011, they lost $5.1 billion. That's because a mandatory $5.5 billion retirement benefits package wasn't paid out. Mail volume has declined by 1.7% again. Postal rates went up just January the 22nd to 45 cents from 44 cents. Now, I will contend, and I think you would agree with this, that there's no other way in the world that you can send a letter from California to New York for just 45 cents. There's no other way you can match that value. But still, rates keep going up, service keeps going down. The USPS is the country's second largest employer, second only to Walmart. And there was a time, I love this, there was a time during the 19th century when the post office employed 75% of all of the government workers in the United States. Oh, if we could only have those days back again. It has the largest fleet of vehicles in the country. It handled 40% of the world's mail, not just the United States mail, the world's mail. And it's in the Constitution, as you say. So here's the deal. You've got an institution that is hemorrhaging money. That is, while it's a grand institution, it is a losing proposition. And Postmaster General Patrick Donahoe is considering, as you say, closing post offices and these processing centers. It's going to eliminate 120,000 workers plus another 100,000 through just normal attrition and save about $20 billion. And when Donahoe was asked, he's made the point very quickly that the savings that he's proposing are really only about 1% of the deficit. So I leave it to you. Yes, this is a grand institution, but it is hemorrhaging money. What are we to do?
Well, I would contest your premise about the hemorrhaging of money, because the main reason that the Postal Service is running the large deficits that it has been are two. The recession, which impacted volumes and revenues very seriously in 2009 and thereafter, because the recovery has been so weak, and the $5 billion a year that the Postal Service is required to pay into a fund to pre-fund retiree health benefits for the next 75 years. So $5 billion a year over the past 4 years, that law that went into effect in 2006, accounts for some $20-25 billion of the Postal Service's deficit. And you combine that with the recession, and you have a complete explanation for the problems that we're looking at. If Congress would simply change the law requiring those $5 billion a year payments and re-amortize so that they weren't paying so much down the road, I mean, 75 years of retiree benefits, these people haven't even been born yet. Everybody knows how crazy that is, but there are interests using the deficit that the Postal Service is running because of those prepayments to their own political advantage to accomplish things that they've wanted to accomplish for a long time. Dismantling the Postal Service is a plan that's been hatched by the big mail companies and other interests that want to privatize the Postal Service for a variety of reasons, and they hate that postal workers earn a good middle-class wage. They make three times what the average Walmart worker makes, and the 1% doesn't like that.
Well, there's a lot in that, Steve. So let's go through this. My guest is Steve Hutkins. We're talking about Save the Post Office. His website is savethepostoffice.com. And I want to talk about those two points, the recession and then the retirement benefits, because both are valid points. The recession, I'm going to argue with you, though, because postal the number of letters that have been mailed have historically been going down. It wasn't just because of the recession. We have seen a drop over the last decade.
If you look at the numbers, first-class single-piece mail started to decline gradually in 2000, and it's declined fairly steadily ever since, and that is due largely to the Internet. But the bulk, if you look at the charts, the real drop took place starting, the peak was 2006, and it started to trail off a little in 2007, and then it really started to hit the skids when the recession came, because so much of the mail is standard advertising mail, and when the economy was bad, the advertisers advertised less. And now that the economy started to improve a little bit, that mail is actually coming back, and the declines have slowed down considerably. If they would just wait it out and deal with the deficit problem by addressing the health care mandate, we have an expanding economy. If the economy isn't going to be bad forever, God, we hope.
We hope.
And the mail can come back. The volumes can return. They might not be like they were in 2006 when they peaked, but they're painting a scenario out there of, you know, the Postal Service is going off a cliff if they don't cut the whole infrastructure and workforce in half. The numbers you quoted were quite accurate. There's about 600,000 postal workers, and they want to get rid of 220,000 of them. Actually, it's worse. They want to get rid of 280,000, almost half of the career employees, and increase by threefold the number of contract workers. Those are the non-union, lower-paid, part-time workers. That's all part of the effort to undermine the unions and to undermine postal workers.
Well, all right, Steve, it's a very interesting premise. I think it all boils down to, though, the Keppel Commission back in the 1970s.
Yeah, you know about them, too. You've done your homework.
Well, I am Billy the Brain. That's why I do these things. But the Keppel Commission back in the 70s, they were the ones who made the U.S. Post Office into a quasi-governmental agency.
Right.
They were neither beast nor fowl. And that is what has been the bugaboo since the 1970s. Now, this all became a problem back in 1966 when the U.S. Post Office first showed its sign of trouble in Christmas. There was a huge influx of Christmas mail, and it clogged up the largest mail processing plant or processing center in the United States, which happens to be in Chicago. Some people, and I believe you're included in this, believe that Postmaster General Donahue is really leading the U.S. Post Office down the path to privatization. Is this a good idea? And the fundamental question is the Post Office a business or is it a public service? Make your case.
Well, you put it perfectly, Bill. I couldn't have done it better. It started in 1970 with the Keppel Commission. That was a commission set up by President Johnson. It consisted almost entirely of corporate executives. They wanted to privatize the Postal Service. They couldn't do it. They set up this quasi-agency that's some hybrid in between as a first step towards privatization. Keppel, who ran the commission, was the head of the ex-head of AT&T, and he said, I would love to privatize the Postal Service tomorrow, but I can't do it. This is how we're going to get there, though, from here to there. So he wanted to privatize it, and the corporate class has wanted to privatize it ever since. The people of the country, I believe, for the most part, would like a Postal Service that is a service that serves the people of the country. That's why they like their post offices. That's why they like that 45-cent postage, and they want the universal service that the Postal Service provides. If you turn the post office into a business, the postage rates are going to go up. In European countries where they've privatized the postal service, postal system, postage is twice as much as it is here. The private carriers, UPS and FedEx, only deliver to a small portion of the country. The Postal Service has to pick up the last mile and finish their work for them. The impacts of privatizing the Postal Service are beyond anybody's imagination. But you don't have to look too far, because it's already acting like a privatized business, cutting half the workforce, cutting half the post offices, and cutting half of the processing plants. It's a good picture of what a privatized business would look like.
Well, let me take the other side of that argument, Steve, if I can, for just a moment, and say there are people in this country that are out of work, and they look at the amount of money that postal workers are making and saying, hey, this doesn't seem right either. There are other people in this country that say the size and scope of government shouldn't be any bigger than it is, and taking the government into a service really folds it back underneath the government and makes it the largest government agency that there is. So how do you argue against those points? I mean, you either believe that this is a business or it's a service. It can't be either one of them. And there are people today that feel that it doesn't need to be a service.
Well, the Postal Service, don't forget, doesn't take any tax money. So even though it's part of the government, it's not supported by our tax money. So it's not, even though some people perceive it as part of the big government problem, those postal workers are not being paid by tax dollars. The Postal Service brings in, $70 billion a year and has plenty of money to pay its workers. The other question, of what about people who are unemployed or working at jobs that pay more poorly than the Postal Service? It's by paying workers well that the economy gets its, where were consumers going to come from if postal workers and people like that aren't paid well? You could say that about anybody. They're all getting paid too much because other people aren't getting paid enough. Life isn't fair, but it's not going to solve anything to push postal workers out of the middle class or to put them on the unemployment line. We need a thriving economy. We don't need to devastate the postal system and the communities where postal workers work.
I understand that point, and I would agree that you're making a very valid point. I guess I scratch my head when I look at this administration and say, but the administration's top priority is jobs, yet they're putting 220 to maybe as many as 280,000 people out of work, and these are good middle-class people that they're putting out of work. So it does make you wonder what the motivations are there. My guest is Steve Hutchins. We're talking about his wonderful website. Now, you've started this website, SaveThePostOffice.com. How did you and why did you think that social media and that the Internet could be an effective tool in mobilizing Americans to think deeply about the post office?
Well, when I started, I didn't realize what a effective tool it could be. But I was doing research about post office closings on the Internet one day, and I discovered that they had closed nearly half the post offices in Great Britain over the past few years, and there were lots and lots of articles and Facebook pages and websites trying to save all the post offices over there. So I thought, oh my God, that's what's going to happen here. So I started a website like the ones I had seen over there.
Wow, it's a brilliant idea. My guest has been Steve Hutchins. We've been talking about Save the Post Office, his website, SaveThePostOffice.com. Steve, if people are intrigued by this idea, they want to hear more of the debate, learn more about it, where would you direct them to go on the Internet?
Well, I think my website's a good place to start, and it has links to lots of other postal websites. There are all kinds of postal news websites where they keep track of all the articles about the news. So there's plenty right on the site to just lead you to other sites where you can get a different point of view. There's probably, a dozen good sites out there where they're keeping track of all the news and people are making, their commentaries, and you can get a wide variety of opinions without too much trouble.
The site is SaveThePostOffice.com. Steve, it has been a delight. Thank you so much for being my special guest here on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We'll talk to you down the road.
Thanks for having me on, Bill, and thanks for those great questions, and thanks for challenging my point of view.
It's been great, Steve.